Welcome to Talking Books on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series I discuss books and what they mean to my guests on the program. Have with me in the studio today on Talking Books, Professor Sandro Caruana from the University's Department of Arts and Languages and Education within the Faculty of Education, where he lectures on Italian language and teaching methodology. Professor Caruana read for a B.Ed. honours and a Master's in Education here in Malta, and then went on to read for his Ph.D. at Pavia. However, today, we're not going to talk about his academic work so much as the books that he enjoys reading when the set texts are put on one side. Welcome, Sandro.
Thank you very much.
As I've known you since you were, if not a student, certainly in your early days here at the university, I think I can claim the privilege of calling you by your first name.
Absolutely.
Before going into detail about your chosen works, you mentioned several books when we first discussed your participation in this program, and all of them were in Italian. Is this deformazione professionale a coincidence, or just because you prefer to read Italian literature?
Well, I mean, it is a little bit of a deformazione professionale. I mean, undoubtedly, the very fact that, I mean, I obviously carried out a part of my studies in Italy, and the very fact that I'm generally also, a linguist, I mean, I'm interested mainly in Italian language, seems to very often take me actually down the path of Italian fiction and non-fiction books. So generally, I must say that quite a large amount of my leisure time reading is in Italian, definitely. I do have enjoy reading books in English too, occasionally. Very much, I must say, influenced by my wife, because my wife is an avid reader, and sometimes, you know, she tells me, listen, you know, this is really worth reading, so read it. Something which I can't do because she doesn't read much in Italian. And I also sometimes enjoy reading some books in Maltese. I mean, you know, I like most of Trevor Zara stuff. Manuel Mifsud is a very also good person, a friend of mine, and I love his books too, and the other local authors too. But having said that, I mean, the majority of the books I read are definitely in Italian.
There's been a lot of in the news lately about the Fiera del Libro. I can't remember exactly what it was called, but they're doing a lot in Italy to actually encourage reading, aren't they? I mean, there's quite a lot going on.
Yes, I mean, it is obviously one of the topics which regularly seems to surface even on Italian, for example, newspapers, you know, generally claiming or speaking in negative terms about the fact that Italians do not read much. I don't know whether this is true or not. I mean, it's very difficult, actually, I think, to have a reliable survey, nationwide survey, and, you know, compare reading habits of a whole population with others. Having said this, what I always used to be impressed is was when I used to live in Italy, the amount of people who actually used to read, especially on the trains, and not read newspapers, but actually be reading books, was pretty high, you know. I mean, I don't mean to be negative in this respect, maybe even because the motorway got shorter distances, but, you know, you actually do see lots of people in Italy with books, especially, obviously, while traveling. So, if it means anything, I mean,
maybe
I can't...
it's a myth that they...
Yes, it can also be, yes, it doesn't really mean anything, as I'm telling you. However, it is one of the topics which regularly surfaces, and there is generally, however, a lot of awareness on the importance of reading in Italy. This is not only seen by the amount of, for example, prizes at a national level which are dedicated to this, but also, you know, there are also television programs which are specifically dedicated to reading and to, you know, giving publicity to recently published books.
In fact, there are some writers in Italy who have been sort of raised to almost iconic status. I mean, I hope later on in the programme we'll be talking a little bit about Andrea Cavalleri.
Yes.
I mean, he is really an icon.
Yes, there are a number of writers who do definitely cross into, you know, the more popular media, let's call it this way, especially television. Cavalleri, yes, is a case in point. I mean, in this case, maybe Cavalleri has crossed over through his writings, through his books. Sometimes you actually do get writers who not only cross over with their books, but because they actually become television program presenters. One of them is actually Carlo Lucarelli, who's one of his books maybe I'll be speaking about later, you know. So it's difficult actually to define, for example, a person as a writer in some cases or as a television personality. This
exactly.
Definitely.
One of the things that had amazed me when I first went to work in Rome back in another life in 1974, and we were getting on the bus and seeing adults reading cartoon books.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that... In England, of course, there is no culture of adults reading cartoons, but there is very much.
There is very much in Italy. In Italy, there are certain, cartoon books which are extremely popular amongst adults. One of them, for example, is Dylan Dog. Quite honestly, I'm not very familiar with the genre, but it's about this police investigator too. Another one is Tex Willer, you know, of all the times, I suppose. There was also Corto Maltese once upon a time, but again. These are very much, collectors' material. You'd get people who absolutely every month would buy the newest edition of this Dylan Dog, for example. So yes, there is very much a niche in that sense in Italy. I don't know whether, honestly, it would be also present in other countries. I'm sure it would be in some way or another. But what I can say is that definitely in Italy there is very much a following of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The first book on the top of the pile of six, I might say, that you passed on to me, immediately caught my attention because it was a writer that actually I've been meaning to explore for some time, Gianrico Carofiglio, who is in his professional life, of course, a magistrate.
Mm-hmm.
This particular novel is called Le Perfezioni Provvisorie, edited by Sellerio, and is the most recent in a series of what the Italians would call gialli, detective stories, with Guido Guerrieri as the lawyer protagonist. Other books, listeners might have heard of Testimoni Inconsapevole, Ad Occhi Chiusi, Ragionevoli Dubbi, in the same series.
Yes, which have also been, represented on television, incidentally, a couple of them too.
Carofiglio has had great success in his writing and won prestigious Premio Bancarella, other prizes. Tell us a bit about the book, about the personaggio.
Yes. Now, first of all, this book, incidentally, has just been nominated as one of the five books which have been shortlisted for the Premio Campiello only last week, which in a way is a bit surprising, I must say, because even though it's at the top of the pile and I actually gave it to you, I don't think it's probably one of the best books of Carofiglio. I prefer the others that I've read of his, but this is the most recent one that I've read. That's why I basically brought it along with me. First of all, what is interesting about Carofiglio is that his main protagonist, this Guido Guerrieri, as you have said, who is a lawyer, is the protagonist of the book and also presents the cases very often from a lawyer's perspective. So it is, in a way, a libro giallo, what we'd call a thriller, or sort of poliziesco sort of book, but not presented from the eyes of the, detective, or from the eyes of the policeman, maybe, but from the eye of the lawyer, which in a way gives a totally different perspective, which I found quite interesting, especially in his other books, which you mentioned earlier. So Guerrieri, I think I can relate to him quite well, because he's middle-aged, in a way. He gives great importance also to his professional life, in a way. He of course, like everybody, has his ups and downs, which are very clearly also expressed in all of these books of his, because there's also the personal side of this lawyer in the book. It's not only the professional side of it. And, in this specific book, he deals with a specific case which regards this girl who has gone missing, and he decides to take on the case. And in actual fact, it's quite strange, because it's not a case a lawyer would normally take on, but he's basically persuaded to do so by a colleague of his, and he actually takes it on and then actually does manage to get to the bottom of it, which is not a positive ending ultimately either, may I add. What I feel as well is interesting is that, again, Carofiglio, first of all, there's also a strong link between Carofiglio and Bari, the city of Bari in Puglia, in the south of Italy. Which is something I like as well. One of the reasons why I enjoy reading in Italian is that very often it's very difficult to separate the cultural background from the actual narration itself, which of course is fictitious. So there's this very strong link with Bari, with the Bari of, you know, of maybe these, you know, little places where people can actually go and have a drink and meet other friends, and basically the distinction between the old part of the town, the Bari Vecchia, and the more modern, of course, urban sprawl, so to say.
This is a very sort of Italian thing, this sense of place.
Yes,
the sense
very
of
much.
Place. Even again mentioning Andrea Camille, the yes. Bigata, kind of
yes.
that sense of I am Sicilian or I am. Or in the case of the next book that you chose,
yes.
I am Sardinian,
yeah.
Because the next one down in the pile is a book by Salvatore Niffoi, Il pane di Abele, which he himself has described as biblical. Well, which is fairly obvious given the title. And here we're talking about Sardinia, and he was born and lives in Orani in Provincia di Nuoro. A prolific writer, I read somewhere that he's got another 10 novels sitting in the drawer waiting to be published, which is incredible. Very well known for his La Bedova Scalza, which is obviously what he won the Premio Campiello for in 2006. These Sardinian roots, how do you feel about this sense of place that comes like a sort of filo conduttore all the way through the book?
Yeah, this interest in Sardinian authors has been sparked because, again, professionally I have quite a lot of contacts with a colleague of mine at the University of Cagliari. And I wasn't very familiar, I must say, with at least contemporary Sardinian authors, but he made it, I think, a personal mission of his to, you know, give me many books written by Sardinian authors, and I've read quite a number of them now. I'm actually reading one by Maria Jacobbe, who's also Sardinian, but who lives in Denmark, so it's a bit of a different story there at the moment. But Niffoi was definitely one of those who immediately grabbed my attention. Again, there's very much a link between his roots, his Sardinian roots, which is very, very evident in this particular book, Il pane di Abele, which is ultimately a story of betrayal, ultimately. And again, the actual interplay between what is fictitious and what is, on the other hand, very much a realistic background is, I think, very fascinating. I think Niffoi is also very interesting, again, from a linguistic point of view. His writing is, first of all, very flowing, very pleasant to read, I find. But at the same time, you know, you also get, like in the case of Camilleri, the intrusion of some Sardinian elements, which obviously are given their own Sardinian names. In terms of, you know, Niffoi and the idea of being Sardinian, I mean, an Italian author, I believe it was Vittorini, had actually once said that a person who lives on an island only feels that the ground is really solid beneath his feet when he's on the island. I'm not sure whether this applies to us Maltese too, in a way. So even though, as you know, maybe the Sardinians refer to Italy as il continente, very often it's their own continente is actually Sardinia, which of course in many respects is very different to, for example, Camilleri's Sicily, even because even geographically, you know, the Sardi are very much, ultimately farmers and have always been shepherds and have always developed very much, even historically, the internal areas and not necessarily the coastal areas of Sardinia, which gives a very different, they were very much afraid of pirates and of invasions from the sea. So automatically this gives a very, very distinct, character to these specific novels, which are very much based on, you know, not on a seafaring and on a sea-related form of life.
Very much an internal discussion.
Yes, absolutely.
Isn't
it's farming. So.
An internal, not only physically, but also sort of mentally. I mean,
yes.
You've got this guy who comes
exactly.
from abroad and so how he's taken in by this the family of...
Exactly. And how he becomes part of them for a while, but then eventually moves to Rome. And in a way, the betrayal, because it's ultimately a story of two friends who are practically brothers. That's why Abel, you know, it's this, so to say, Cain and Abel story. But again, with the woman in the middle, exactly. And the betrayal actually occurs when they are young. But it's only that the brother who is actually betrayed gets to know about it or realizes much later that he has actually been betrayed and actually then goes to actually take revenge, which in a way is, you know, falls in its own right in a way of reasoning, which sometimes is also present, I mean, in general, not only, of course, in Sardinia,
exactly.
But anywhere.
Well, this is sort of really going from the particular to the universal. And,
yes,
and
yes,
obviously
yes.
It's a universal
Nifoy
story.
Is very capable of doing that in some ways. I feel that is why I think Athi has struck me as an author, even compared to other Sardinian authors, that it is based locally, but obviously, again, the themes are very, very universal, absolutely.
That's what makes him the brilliant writer he is. Another story, which is a little bit different, although obviously talking about place as well, is the third book on the pile, which is Italiani si diventa of Beppe Serenini, which is a narrative really of an Italian born when Gronchi was still president of Italy, which makes it about 1957 if my calculations are right, when the Fiat Topolino was becoming car that what people could possibly buy.
Yeah.
It's a book about my generation, really. I mean, you're younger than me, so perhaps it doesn't have the resonance perhaps it does for me. Interesting that the author says it is interesting for everybody, because it's interesting for the generation that came in the middle of the 50s. It's interesting for the children of those people, because they can look back and laugh.
Yes.
At the antics, the strange Elvis Presley hairstyles of their parents, and also quite amusing for older people, because they can sort of see what their family was doing in those years.
No, I mean, again, it's also, even though maybe it does precede slightly my generation, it is a book which, again, I related to very much. Again, it's a little bit, of course, different to what we've just been speaking about when we've mentioned Nifoy or Caro Figlio, in the sense that this is ultimately, a biography in its own right. Maybe it's a narrative, of course, but it's with many biographical elements. Severini is, of course, a journalist, first and foremost. And yes, he does. He speaks about growing up in Italy in the 50s and the 60s with all, well, first of all, in a period of time which ultimately, even economically, was quite a positive one for Italy. And of course, the dramatic, in a way, changeover between the 60s and the 70s. That is, you know, Italy moved from the boom economico of the late 50s and the 60s to the era, of rebellion towards the end of the 60s. And then it literally plunged into the so-called Anni di Piombo, especially in the 70s, you know, because of various terroristic acts and all that. So it's a personal journey through a number of these situations. But Severini has a great gift. He's extremely ironical in his way of writing. He can basically boil down an experience also to significant yet simple terms. And in this specific book, you know, he actually relates his own personal experiences, and often mentions what ultimately are very often seen as stereotypes, even in terms of Italians, but which I think even we Maltese can relate to. You know, the fact that, on the 15th of August, Ferragosto, you know, it's lock, stock and barrel to the beach, and, you know, traffic for hours. So you get very much that light. The book is mainly based on the light side, an actual fact of becoming Italian, as he calls it, no Italian si diventa. Sometimes, however, there are undertones, which actually, you know, ultimately also help you understand the natural fact that there are other issues also at stake.
Definitely. The fact that we can relate to it at all in any serious way is probably also due to the fact that we had Italian, the Rai television, yes, in our houses from, what, 1958 or something,
yes,
where we sort of partook of the culture that he's talking about as it was changing through the news, through the music, through the television programs, Rischia Tutto, and yes, all this kind of thing. And as you're saying about Ferragosto, the idea of the Rimini holiday. We have our own parallels, obviously, here, the villeggiatura.
In a small way,
obviously. The idea of things closing down virtually in August and you going off. So although it's a different country, different language, different people, but we can definitely, I feel, warm to that.
Yes, definitely. I mean, the very fact, I mean, that we are familiar with Italian, you know, the Italian way of life in general, I would say, is absolutely true. The fact that, of course, in the, well, 70s, 80s, Italy was very much, in a way, present here in Malta, especially through television. So, again, for somebody of my generation, it's extremely simple, actually, to relate to each and every episode, almost, that he describes, you know, from politicians, for example, that he mentions, to various episodes that he relates.
There's a very funny bit where he's describing how he and his friends went to England to learn English on the south coast. My hometown is somewhere near the south coast, so I'm very familiar with the areas that he was mentioning. And they stayed in these pension place, bed and breakfasts. And his description of the English breakfast is absolutely hilarious. The sausage with signs of definite rigor mortis.
Yes. That is very much the Vernine, you know. I mean, even again, I mean, the fact that they relate, for example, at a point in time of having this this trip to America and this old van, you know, these six young boys all together and... yes. Then again, as I said, he does relate these specific episodes. However, one must also understand as well, you know, some underlying features, which sometimes, you know, I mean, even in this trip to America, somehow there is the sense of, you know, escaping from one's reality in its own right, and of, you know, moving to the promised land in a way. Of course, just on an adventure ultimately. There is, however, you know, even this feeling of going to a place which is so much, in a way, better, or at least which is depicted as so much better than my own homeland. Of course, it's not necessarily the case. So I think Severnini, again, has this gift of being able to present things relatively lightly, whilst at the same time clearly pointing to certain issues which are very much present in his own culture and in his own homeland.
When I mentioned to my son yesterday evening that we were going to talk about this together, he said, yes, he's a good writer, but there's only one thing wrong with him. And I said, what's that? He said, he's Interista. My son being a Juventino, that is a big sin, to be Interista.
I know. At this point, it is definitely, I mean, I'm also a Juventus supporter, but... what I can say is that Severnini is also a journalist and has recently many of his articles are very, very much related to football, to sports, and in a way maybe that can be a little bit of a minus, not because he's an Inter supporter, but because he is now very, very, very heavily associated to this type of journalism, which is not always necessarily positive. There's another author who is Giampiero Mughini, who again is a critic, you know, he's a journalist and who has written some important works. But again, his passion for football, which I suppose is quite common in many Italians, has now, I think, overridden his...
Becomes all-consuming.
In a way, yes, to a certain extent, but it does occur.
The next author that you suggested that we might talk about is Stefano Benni. I must say, he's not an author about whom I knew very much. Perhaps you could sort of fill us in what kind of genre he usually writes about.
Well, Benni originally had written a book entitled Il Bar Sotto il Mare, which was a collection of short stories, ultimately. Then he wrote a number of other books, Achille Pie Veloce, and is one of them. This other one that I've got here, Margherita Dolce Vita, is another. Salta Tempo is another, I think, very good book of this author. He's worth exploring for those who you know are interested in Italian contemporary literature. Benni always plays along the fine line between realism and what is ultimately quite grotesque in its own right. So even this Margherita Dolce Vita, you know, even the name itself of the protagonist, Margherita Dolce Vita, she's this young overweight girl. Who has issues, I suppose, like most young girls might have. But basically, what happens is that she gets, you know, new neighbors move in, and they basically develop a piece of land close to their house and change completely the landscape, because they develop this sort of cube-like house, which is ultra modern, which is obviously totally grotesque, and they live in this total luxury, which is totally different from what she has. You know, her mother, for example, enjoys watching, you know, these soap operas for hours on end. And suddenly there's this great contrast between the two families. But it's not Margherita Dolce Vita, you know, who actually admires or looks up to the style of these new rich neighbors, but it's her family. So her father, for example, starts paying attention and, you know, to the way he dresses. Her mother starts integrating with these new neighbors, where she sees the negative side of it all. And so it's really very much a contrast of, you know, this new way of life, which is seen as so rich, so luxurious, but which is ultimately shallow, to an older way of life, which is obviously simpler, yet poorer. And it's seen through the eyes of this little girl, in a way. I don't really like science fiction, you might have understood. In fact, I have not included. But then again, there are these situations in Benny which are actually well beyond reality, but they are given a sort of grotesque, you know, way of being represented. And I enjoy this. Again, Salta Tempo, another book of his, is the story about this boy who has this oro biologio, it's called, so he can move forward and backwards in time. It seems Back to the Future sort of thing, but it's really well written. And so, you know, he can actually comment about urbanization and anyway.
Well, I certainly you've stimulated my interest in this author, and I'll definitely look him up. The last book on your list, because we've sort of discussed Andrea Camilleri, but really we'd need a whole program for him,
yes.
Is Carlo Lucarelli and Massimo Picozzi, yeah. that write about a book which is about criminals who we would perhaps grudgingly admire.
In a way, yeah. I mean, Lucarelli is, as I mentioned earlier, you know, a television personality, but he's also an author. He also writes fiction, incidentally. This book here is not on fiction, but he normally deals with Misteri d'Italia. He actually had a program on Rai 3 called Blu Notte, in which he would actually deal with these, you know, cold cases or these unresolved mysteries. The most famous of them is probably the one of, for example, Mostro di Firenze, but he also has also dealt with mafia-style situations. He's, again, a very good writer, at least I believe he's a very good writer. Extremely interesting also from a linguistic point of view, because, again, of his concise, you know, constructions, which are very direct, very straight to the point. And he's also very investigative. He's very investigative, despite, of course, not being able to shed light on mysteries which have been, well, in some cases, dead and buried for tens of years, the way he presents them, you know, makes them actually interesting, even though they are cases which have been, you know, which have actually occurred, have happened so many years ago.
Well, Sandro, thank you very, very much for coming on the program. Time ran out as usual, or all too quickly. Could have gone on for much longer. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Talking Books. I hope you can join us next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.